BP began to annoy Exxon in the environmental lobbying arena, too. By the end of the 1990s, more of British Petroleum's assets were located in the United States than anywhere else. American public policy was critical to the company. John Brown, however, did not think about industry issues as Lee Raymond did. To ExxonMobil's executives, he seemed to be more of a financial engineer than an operations man. Brown was also in tune with the transatlantic center-left politics of the late 1990s. He enjoyed a strong relationship with the newly elected British Prime Minister Tony Blair. He had relatively easy access to Bill Clinton's White House. He was exactly the sort of big business leader Clinton-era Democratic politicians often seemed to value, a thoughtful globalist willing to endorse the principles, at least, of the mainstream environmental, human rights, and public health movements. Brown spoke early about the importance of global warming. He rebranded his company as the letters BP, eliminated or abbreviated all other reference to British Petroleum, and approved the marketing slogan, Beyond Petroleum. The corporation's branding team chose a green and yellow logo that looked like the sun, as if BP were moving decisively out of the oil and gas business and into solar power. An ExxonMobil executive at the corporation's British affiliate took a photograph of a BP retail gas station with a windmill on top and sent it to Lee Raymond with a note, "This is our competitor." "Oh," Raymond said dismissively. "This is just a public relations strategy," he said. "There is no substance to it. Don't overreact." BP did invest in some solar manufacturing in India, China, Australia, and the United States, where its plant was located in Frederick, Maryland, a convenient drive from Washington, D.C., and thus an optimum site for tours by members of Congress or their staffs who might be interested in alternative energy. Yet the scale of BP's solar investments was minuscule in comparison with its oil and gas operations. The investments were understood within the corporation, according to one former senior executive, as justifiable not so much on business as on marketing grounds. BP Solar returned more to BP in favorable reputation than comparable sums spent on corporate image advertising ever could. "The oil industry is already detested by people who think we're indifferent to the environment," Brown explained. "We must persuade our ultimate customers that this isn't true." Smog and other pollution from oil-derived fuels meant that customers can see it, and they can feel it, and they can smell it. And they look at oil companies and say, "You brought us this, and we don't want to be in that position." Ken Cohen occasionally seethed in private conversation about BP's image makeover. First, he pointed out, BP remained fundamentally an oil and gas company, one of the largest in the world. Of course it was in that position. How could it pretend otherwise? By 2002, Cohen had also assembled an issue-by-issue chart showing that on public policy controversies from climate change to human rights, the recommendations of BP and ExxonMobil were a little different. Yet the public's impression was that the two companies had diametrically opposed approaches to climate change and corporate responsibility. As a recently minted public affairs strategist, Cohen could appreciate, in professional terms, Lord Brown's achievements. He knew, too, that BP had the advantages that ExxonMobil lacked. It was not burdened by the high negative ratings caused by the Valdez spill, and therefore had much greater scope to reinvent itself in the public mind. BP executives and public affairs strategists looked on ExxonMobil the way many of its competitors did, as self-isolating, stubborn, inscrutable, and behind the corporate times. ExxonMobil executives rationalized their poor reputation when compared with some of their industry peers by assuring themselves that they conducted business ethically and operated safely and with financial discipline. They took pride in their self-image as a corporation that did not try to pretend to be something it was not. Yet Cohen recognized that BP had accomplished something improbable: the cost-effective greening of an oil company. When he was in a more generous mood, he told his colleagues, "Hats off to them." The decisions Brown took at BP were not merely cosmetic. In 2002, the corporation announced that it would no longer fund any political activity or any political party, a form of neutrality that ExxonMobil could not claim. Brown eventually extended BP's corporate benefits to the gay and lesbian partners of its employees. Lee Raymond declined to do so. On climate, however, BP dodged and wove during the first Bush term. "The science of global warming is unproven," Brown said in 2001, a formulation not much different from Lee Raymond's. "I question whether it will ever be proven, but there is a risk there." This risk was enough to begin to take steps to begin to make a difference. Still, the danger was not large enough to justify the costs and the global bargain contemplated by the Kyoto Protocol. The treaty was a bridge too far, Brown said. Only very gradually would BP shift toward acceptance of the cap-and-trade system, a regulated, government-imposed marketplace that emerged in Europe to control carbon dioxide emissions and help governments there attempt to keep their commitments under Kyoto. He searched for the right level of transparency or openness in order to build rather than to undermine trust in a world of suspicious media and single-issue NGOs. There were some public policy matters where not even the most creative corporate policies or public relations campaigns could make much difference, however. The invasion of oil-laden Iraq was one.